Welcome to part two of The Anatomy of Anger. Last time, we talked about how anger just is, and that the main mantra to remember is all feelings are okay, all behaviors are not. It's what we do with that angry energy that is either skillful or not. We also talked about how anger lives in our bodies based on the fight or flight response, and it's our responsibility to be a detective of sorts, to try and learn where in our body we first get feedback that our anger meter is beginning to rise. The next level of awareness is related to past conditioning. Most of us were raised by people who were themselves totally confused about how to deal with core feelings. So the modeling we received often laid down unskillful patterns of blind expression or destructive repression. How anger was handled in our original family can shed some light on the patterns that continue to bind us. Is it okay to rage all over the living room, yell, throw things, get physical? There were often unspoken family rules. We get out of control to regain control. Especially for men who have often been trained to not acknowledge or allow their sadness or fears, anger is the only allowable emotion. This has been termed the male emotional funnel, where all of our diverse feelings are channeled into an angry outburst. Anger is a push-away emotion, rather than a feel-it, like fear or sadness, emotion. So I found it useful to look for a layer of fear or sadness whenever I find myself getting angry in similar situations, often with an intensity seemingly out of proportion to the situation. I remember a few years back going for a float trip on the Rio Grande with my men's group, and as we were putting our kayaks in, there was a young man obviously in distress, angry and raging at the side of the shore. I went over to speak with him and learned that he and a few friends had been going down the river the week before, and one of them had fallen out and drowned. They had been drinking, but what was interesting was that he was channeling all of this tremendous grief into being angry with the state police who had not yet found the body. It was a clear example of how we as men often fail to grieve appropriately because we get so focused on expressing it as anger. Triggering occurs when we perceive the present through the lens of the past. The essence of it is that the strength of our reaction is inappropriate for the degree or intensity of the stimulus. We react powerfully to a tone of voice, an expression, verbal or emotional content of the other, because it rouses an old wound, those painful splinters of the past, too difficult to dig out, too painful to leave alone. In that moment of the flinch, when we overreact, when unthinking drama begins to rage, that is the time to realize our shadow is rising. If it's been our tendency to get upset by circumstances over and over again, then we'll likely be upset by these same circumstances in the future. Our old story gets instantly activated, producing a wide range of feelings and sensations that are startlingly familiar. So I found it useful to examine what the common triggers are that stimulate an angry response in me. In the old S days, it was suggested that almost always anger arises from an unmet expectation, an undelivered communication, or a blocked intention. To that, I would add a violation of personal boundaries. These four categories have been a useful frame for me to clearly identify my own personal triggers. Mine rest heavily on unmet expectations. As an example, I expect to have knowledgeable and easy-to-find assistance when I go to a hardware store, which is often not the case. I've begun using a little mantra as I drive there. I'm going to have a pleasant shopping experience. I'm going to have a pleasant shopping experience. I'm going to have a pleasant shopping experience. It helps remind me that I create my own reality, and I don't want to be childlike in my reactions when life doesn't dish up exactly what I requested. Another example is when my computer gets wonky. usually when I have a deadline. My expectation is that things will run smoothly even after one of those infamous updates. So when I start getting cranky, I or my partner just say, "Pollution," to remind me I don't want to spread my angry energy around the house. Challenging enough that this unwelcome guest is in the living room of my consciousness. No need to further transmit its negative energy. It's very common to see the undelivered communication as a trigger for anger in the world. People are trying to explain something or request something of another, and they don't seem to be listening, so we raise our voice as if that's going to get them to respond. And often it does, because then they start to pay more attention. So undelivered communication is often a trigger for many people. Some will argue that anger is an appropriate response to a boundary violation, and that it's useful in our quest for social justice, where it can serve as a tool creating enormous energy to be converted. And many people seem to have the habit of getting angry as a way to feel alive, to get stimulated and motivated. To this, I would respond that anger can be useful when I greet it as an initial signal, that anger is a signal. My anger is a signal. But in general, I've found anger to be more blind than insightful, more destructive than creative, more revengeful than seeking a win-win peaceful outcome. Surely there are other ways to tap into vitality that have less downside. Anger is like electricity, destructive if not channeled properly. It's neither an inner enemy nor a positive friend that brings extra energy. While the possibility of creative tension is there with any conflict, anger often wants to blame or punish rather than understand. Next week, in part 3, we'll examine the nature of resentments, specific coping strategies such as timeout and the reframe, being assertive versus being aggressive, and dealing skillfully with another's angry energy. Thanks for listening.